Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Wren Women Salon Podcast, a series of interviews about what it is to be a modern-day Renaissance woman and how to flourish as a Wren woman in today's world. I'm your host, Dale Griffith Stamos, co-author of Wren Women, What Modern Renaissance Women Have to Teach Us About Living Rich, Fulfilling Lives. Welcome to our Wren Women Among Us podcast, a series featuring incredible modern-day Renaissance women. This series, along with our Meet the Wren Women series, which features women who are profiled in our book, Wren Women, will introduce you to some extraordinary women. People often ask, what is a Wren woman? And the short answer is, a Wren woman is someone, past or present, who is a multifaceted Renaissance-style woman who brings to the world a unique perspective and expansive attitude. She is not only about achievement, but about service and embracing a meaningful life. I am very happy to have Nadine Lajoie, or Nadine, I don't know if we pronounce it French or not French way, but I like both, on our show today. Now, let me tell you about Nadine. She's quite amazing. She is an adventurous Wren woman who is an award-winning entrepreneur, best-selling author, international speaker, singer, musician, and yes, motorcycle racing champion. She applies key principles of competitive racing to success strategies in her speaking, business coaching, and in her best-selling book, Win the Race of Life with Balance and Passion at 180 miles per hour. In 1995, she launched a highly successful financial planning business and was recognized for 8 years running with awards from the Excellence Club of Canada. She retired as a millionaire from that at age 41 to pursue her multiple other interests and enterprises, including professional motorcycle racing, singing, yacht racing, and forming a real estate company which operates in 4 states of the United States. Nadine is featured in the book Fight for Your Dreams by Les Brown and is an inspirational and energizing speaker. She has shared big stages like TEDx and California Women's Conference with such speakers as Jean Houston, Les Brown, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Marianne Williamson. She has been featured in Forbes and USA Today and on ABC, Fox, and CBS Money Watch and has been a 4-time Book Award finalist. She was the recipient in 2012 of the Women of Impact Award from Focus on Women magazine. Nadine exemplifies the Wren Women traits of risk-taking, growth, expansion, challenging the status quo, and trust in the power of one's dreams. Welcome, Nadine.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I know.
For one time, I will not be the extraterrestrial person because you talk exactly my language of being multitask and all that. So that would be fun. Then yeah. I really appreciate that you recognize those women like me and you who are Renaissance women.
Oh, I love you saying that because I love how you just said I won't be the extraterrestrial because I think a lot of Wren women have that response where people look at us like we've come from another planet. They think, how is it that one, you're interested in so many things, and two, you accomplish so many things, and nobody can quite wrap their brains around it, which is one of the reasons I wrote this book. And what's lovely is that then a number of women have said to me, oh, now I know what I am. I'm a Wren woman because I've given a name to something that is very real. And there are lots of women who are like this, but, you know, didn't quite know how to categorize themselves. So let's talk about Well, let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about what your childhood and adolescence were like. What were some of the difficulties you faced, and what were your inner imperatives, even as a young person?
Yes, when I was young, my dad was a farmer, and my goal at 4 or 5 years old was to become a singer and being a celebrity. I was already playing piano and composing my own songs, and I had already big dreams, and people were trying to kind of to slow me down, and I became really really introvert. At one point, I was a nerd, and even if I was playing piano, guitar, and I was also playing volleyball when I was 12 or 13 years old. So I did always different things, but my goals were always too big for the people, and everybody was kind of slow me down, as I said. And when I started to realize, oh, I cannot realize my dream, it's too big, I cannot travel the world. My dad is a farmer, we were in a poor family. I cannot be the businesswoman and the traveler and the celebrity that I wanted. So I started to be really depressed and almost committed suicide at the age of 25. And even if I was good at everything, sports, music, piano, everything I was touching, I was good. But, you know, a lot of people, they don't like a high achiever. They are jealous. Mm. And instead of making the efforts, what I was feeling is I was rejected from my friends. Mm. So I had barely no friends until the age of 25, I guess. And that kind of got me into many, many passions because I had that big hole inside myself. And it needed volleyball and piano to save my life. And that's why at 25, I always said, at 25 years old, if life is not better, I will kill myself. And I got sick a week or two before my birthday, and that changed completely my life. And I'll talk a little bit later about that.
Yes, let's definitely talk about that. That sounds so interesting. Those turning points, you know, in the lives of Wren women are so essential. Your story reminds me a lot of the story of one of the women in our book, who, by the way, is also a French speaker. Her name is Hélène Cardona, and she had the same situation as you in that she was good at virtually everything. She was good at math, science. She was a writer. She was a classical pianist. She was a dancer. I mean, it just went on and on. But she had a crisis when her family convinced her to go to medical school because they felt with her math and science ability, that would be the best, you know, way to use her skills. And she she really had a nervous breakdown over the whole thing because it wasn't what her heart was telling her. And so I love, one of the things I talk about with Wren women is that they do eventually learn to follow that inner voice that tells them, no, I am different, but that's who I am. And so that sounds wonderful. And actually, I don't want to forget what you just said. So I would like you to ask, what was that turning point? What did keep you from committing suicide and allowed you to move forward?
For years and years, I was going in school and I was in a volleyball team. So every day I was just going to the gym and play volleyball. So I was really focusing on that dream. And every day I had to practice piano an hour and a half or 2 hours. So this was kind of my fun of my day, the volleyball and the piano. And every day I was telling myself, okay, just get through tomorrow. Just go play volleyball and just go play piano. And piano and music, you know, it's just like all about your emotion. And I was often angry and frustrated, and sometimes I was happy. So, you know, like the music can translate a lot of your emotion. And it's why I come in always to my clients and my speeches, like you need to get your kids doing some good stuff like piano, music, sports, arts, painting, whatever. You need to be able to get them into a passion, because passion and dream, that's what saved my life and saved life of many people. And I always say, if you stop dreaming, you start dying.
I love
that.
Start
dying inside yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what I realized.
Absolutely. It is so powerful what you are saying. And to me, there are many things that you can learn and study that feed your mind, but the arts feed your soul. And if you don't have that, then you're only half, you know, complete or half fed, as it were.
Yeah, and as you know, like the brain is a lot more successful when we use the left brain, which is the logical, mathematics, science, and all that, and the right brain, which is the creativity, the art, the music. We need to, in our society right now, people are still, 45 years later, I always say that I don't want to be fit in the box, and they're still trying to fit people in boxes. And one of the things that is really big those days is the ADD and ADDHD. It's probably because those children are entrepreneurs, they are creative, and they don't want to fit in the box. And the society, the education system, didn't really adapt into that creativity and the go with the flow and the energy. Or sometimes they adapt too much in one sense, and they have not enough discipline. But it needs kind of a middle, and that's what saved my life. And 25, like my birthday is the 9th of May, and the 2nd of May I started to be sick. I got a pneumonia, which means psychosomatically, because every sickness has something to do with your body and your emotion, is you don't want to live, you don't want to breathe, you don't want to be unhurt. And at that time, I didn't realize it. That day, one night, I was to do it after a hockey game. I came home. My boyfriend and I, we were about to split. I didn't have my job in actuary, which I studied, and I was a secretary at $18,000 instead of traveling the world and earning $180,000. So my dreams were dying. So I was dying inside. And that TV host, she said, "You can commit suicide, but you need to call at least one friend." And that morning, I called my mom 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and I said, "Thank you very much for everything you have done. You've done everything right. It's just me. I cannot live with myself. I cannot live with that hole inside myself. And I want to kill myself, but I just wanted to say thank you." And she listened to me with her heart, with her soul, and said, "Hey, call me tomorrow. Call me tomorrow." So every day we were talking. And she saved my life. And now my mission on earth is really to help people to never give up.
So very right. It was wise of you to call your mother on that day. And we are so happy you are still with us. And not only that, but thriving, which is wonderful. So now let's talk about how you became, this was one of your first careers, how you became a highly successful financial planner, and how you were able to retire from that business at 41 as a millionaire.
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's always interesting how life is bringing you to sometimes path that you are not expecting. The last thing that I wanted to be in my life was a financial planner or an insurance agent, and that's what I ended up to do because of my actuary degree as a bachelor. I always loved mathematics and finance and all that, but the thing that had really attracted me into that career is that little ad that was saying, "You can be your own boss, you can work 4 days a week, and you can make $40,000 a year." I said, "Oh my God, that's like without having a boss, that's worth at least $40,000, and being able to work only 4 days a week, 4 weeks of vacation, and make $40,000 a year." I said, "Oh, that's good." But the thing is, they always try to get you, you will do that in your first year. But I set my goal to make $50,000 in 5 years. So instead of being discouraged the first 2-3 years where I was making $18,000 or $20,000 or $22,000, it was, oh, my God. And at one point, I never give up. And it's part of my coaching and when I speak and I train in corporation, because a lot of people, they give up. But because my goal was in 5 years, the fourth year, I get one client who got me $125,000. One client. And people were saying, "Oh, you are lucky about that." I said, no, it's not luck. I'm working with his wife, who has a little portfolio of 100,000. I serve her better than whoever he was doing business with his brokers and all that. And the guy had millions and millions of dollars. So one day I go to visit his wife, like twice a year, like I do. And he said, you know, you give more service to my wife with a small portfolio than my three other brokers together. So he said, I want to transfer with you. And people were saying, oh, my God, it's kind of a luck. You know, at the beginning, you are always lucky or you are crazy. But when you got the deal, they say, oh, you will not ever be able to do another deal like that. And I dealt on that. On that deal with that was a tax shelter, a legal tax shelter. The guy saved millions of dollars in taxes. And I proposed that to his accountant and his lawyer, and they refer me other clients. I get another client for 75, another for 55, 25, 35. And after two or three clients, I arrive at the office with my nice, brand new Lexus SC 430 to show the guys who were betting against me that I will never last in the business, how I was able to do it because I was stubborn, because I was bold, and because I was stick to my clientele service. And I was building relationship, and that's where I was able to retire. Semi-retired at 36 and retired at 41. So I was pretty happy about that. But since I'm retired, I'm working more than ever. So it's always a problem.
Yes, it's not really retirement. I often just call that launching into a new business, you know, launching into the next phase, which is a very, very Renaissance way to look at it, reinventing yourself at each step of the way. And you certainly have done that. I love this story because it shows that the importance of some of the adjectives that you just used, which was, you said you were bold and you persevered. You know, perseverance is such an important trait. Patience, perseverance, not letting go of a goal, you know, are really important traits. And the third thing that you did was you gave incredible service to your clients. And that's really the bottom line. They knew that's why he dropped who else he was using and started using you, because it was clear to him that you were giving the best service. So these are, I think, are really good watchwords for anyone trying to succeed. Now, as a typical Ren woman, you have many, many passions. Some of them are quite distinct from each other. Talk about these passions and how you have managed to pursue them all.
Yes, it's pretty different from music when I started to play piano at 4 or 5 years old. So music was part of my life and saved my life. And after that, like at 12 or 13 years old, I wanted to play volleyball, but my parents had 5 kids. My mom didn't drive, and they said, oh, no, you cannot play volleyball because I cannot just travel you back and forth from the school, which was 45-minute drive. But because I was stubborn again, I found a friend who was able to bring me to my aunt who had a piano so like that I can still continue to practice my piano and play volleyball. So for many years, I did both of them until I broke my knee 5 times. At 30 years old, I was in the Canadian Championship. I finished 9th. Again, I played against 5 Olympians. I was in that league in Canada, so I was in the top in Canada at 5'1". But because of 5 knee injury, my friends went to the Olympics in 2004, but I kind of stopped playing in 2000, 2001. And I got my surgery summer 2000, and I bought a bike for myself, gift from myself, just in case I cannot fulfill that passion anymore. I said, I need to find another passion. And motorcycle was always my passion. At 16 years old, I asked my dad to buy a bike from my uncle, a Virago 750, and the first ride, I dropped the bike, so I never got my license. So, but every year, every time I'm seeing a bike somewhere, like those crotch rockets, I was always excited, and I said, oh, here is my chance to realize that dream, and I bought a bike. I asked the two guys to bring the bike with the 2x6 to be able to put it in my living room, And my parents were there because of the surgery the day after. And they said, what are you doing with the bike in your living room? And the bike was there for all the winter. I didn't have a garage. I didn't have a shed. I put my Christmas lights onto the bike because I didn't have any space to have a Christmas tree. So the bike was like that, and I raced for 11 years until 2011. I got 4 concussions, 1 collarbone, about 15 other crashes, and I was signing real estate deal at the racetrack. My head was not there anymore at 100%, so I couldn't push at 100%. So when I started to not being able to be in the top 5 or top 10 of my field or not being able to beat my own lap times, that's where I decided when I got speaking events, like 3 speaking events in a row, I had to miss 3 races. And that's where I started to quit the motorcycle racing. And a few years later, I met my ex-husband, and now I'm a champion yacht racer. I'm racing sailboat up to a 55, 60-footer. After 10 months, I was coaching already people because of those 5 secrets of the high achiever. So I apply that in everything, in every aspect of my life, and those 5 secrets are really one of the best things that the people can learn.
We're going to I want to ask you a very specific question about those in just a moment, because I really want to go into that. What's interesting about what you're saying, too, is that you are highly competitive and you are ambitious and you do everything, whatever you do it at the best possible level. And some of these traits might not be considered, quote unquote, feminine traits, you know, this idea that a woman can't be highly ambitious or, you know, be highly competitive. And I love that you are, because of course we can, you know, we can, because everybody has both, you know, male and female traits as part of their personality. And you have a wonderful balance of those.
And it's fun that you're bringing that, because a lot of people, they are trying, especially in the male-dominated sport or business, like my financial planning and real estate, like everything is kind of male-dominated, what I do. But you need to be rough and tough, but at the same time, you need to be vulnerable. You need to be amicable. You need to build relationships. We always need those kind of left brain and right brain and the creativity and the logical, as much as we need in our persona to be able to be soft at the same time. Like when I was in motorcycle racing, I was meditating around my bike. Can you believe that? Like at the racetrack with 500 macho around me, I was still being feminine in my masculine sport. And that's the problem, especially when I teach a woman in corporation. A lot of women, they are trying just to have the masculine trait, and they kind of forget themselves. They forgot the feminine attribute we have. We are really good at many things. We just need to find a balance, as you said.
I couldn't agree with you more. Certainly one of the things I talk about in my book is that, in fact, you know, let's get beyond thinking that women need to achieve by becoming more like men. Let's start to realize what women bring to the table. And that, in fact, if women bring the best of femininity and whatever masculine, you know, sensibilities they have, and a man does the same thing, you're going to have a much more workable workplace, because now you have competition and collaboration. Now you have, and sort of being tough and, you know, you have this nice balance, and that's a much healthier and more productive workplace.
Effectively.
So now one Ren woman trait, and you certainly exemplify this, is risk taking. Now, what's interesting is that this is usually taking risks emotionally or in business, but you have taken those kinds of risks, but also physical risks in your motorcycle racing, your yacht racing, particularly though in your motorcycle racing. Talk about the mindset that you need to tackle that degree of risk.
Yeah, the mindset, again, I come back with the 5 secrets of the high achiever, because the focus is the first one. When you are in a corner and you're trying to pass a guy, or you're trying to exit the corner as fast as you can, if you look in corner number three and you are in number one, you will crash and you can die. So a lot of people, mm-hmm. they are focusing to the finish line, but they are not focusing on the step-by-step, the baby step mm-hmm. process. I have mm-hmm. an exercise yeah. that I share with my clients. It's how to build 36 goals in 36 months. And yes, maybe your finish line is having a trip in Italy in 3 years, but you need to go back 3 months later. What did I need to accomplish? And you go back, you kind of reverse engineer and you come back to kind of do the baby step process. And a lot of people, they get discouraged because maybe it doesn't happen the way you want or as fast as you want. And so it's why those vision boards, dream board and all that. I have my racing map and people can even put pins on it on whatever picture they put on your vision board. Each time you're taking an action, just put one pin on it. Now mm-hmm. you see yeah. the progress. Now your subconscious see the picture and they see the progress. And now you are creating a momentum. Same thing in motorcycle mm-hmm. racing. You need that momentum, which leads to the second secret of the high achiever is the adrenaline. Adrenaline, passion, momentum, get the energy going. Stop just being lazy or procrastinating or stay home. Just get out and get that adrenaline going. Mm-hmm. Of course, yes, number three yes. is discipline. So like that, we have to have the discipline. Number four is practice. Practice again and again and again. And number five is coaching. Learn from the best of the best. Like creme de la creme. I was coached by Les Brown, I met the CEO of GE, Jack Welch. I was at a presentation from Steve Wozniak. I have a picture with him on my website. And I'm always surrounding myself by like creme de la creme. And that's where people can really succeed. So like that, you don't have to do the same mistake that other did. At least you know exactly mm-hmm. what to do.
Oh, those are such good pieces of advice on so many levels. Now, I know that you use those steps when you do your business consulting. And I love how they were inspired by your racing. What about in your book, Win the Race of Life? Do you emphasize those particular points in your book? And are there other things that people are going to find in your book?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The book has a lot of motorcycle racing stories and also my story about the suicide in chapter four. That is the mission that I have in life. So I always need to share that story to give hope to people. But the motorcycle racing is so different, I think, than everybody else and all that. Like when I have even a meditation that I compose, and I suggest people to put like heavy metal music, like really energetic music, and I bring people around the racetrack for 20 minutes to really re-energize yourself and do that focus and get out of the comfort zone and just breathe in your helmet and smile in your helmet. Feel the breeze. And that's why I finished third at Daytona. It's because I was in the present moment. I was in the grace of God at each and every one of those seconds. And so that's why what I always say is you need to, if you think you are slow, it's because you're going fast. And if you think you're going fast, it's because you are slow. And it's really kind of a weird thing, and I explain that also in my book, because often it's the level of the skills that are not there yet. You cannot go at 180 miles per hour if your skills are 50 miles an hour. And a lot of people, they are trying to go faster, sooner, too soon, and that's why they crash. Same thing in business and in life. People want to succeed in business, but they don't even have their message and their template and whatever their story is. They don't even have their branding or their website or their business card. They don't even have a budget. They don't even have a one-page summary. They don't even have a business plan or at least a strategy how to accomplish that. They don't have a marketing plan for 12 weeks. How can you launch a book if you don't have a marketing plan? So there are too many information, too much information online right now. And people are confused because as an entrepreneur and as a Renaissance woman, we are wearing a lot of hats. And because we have to wear a lot of hats, which one do you wear first? And that's why people are confused, and we need that sequence to be sure that people are realizing step by step, like at the racetrack, every corner, you practice that corner. If you go the next session, you practice another corner. So when the race arrives on Sunday, now you have practiced all the corners, and now everything comes together. Same thing in business. Sometimes, like me in financial planning, I struggled for 2-3 years, and whoop, suddenly the fourth year, everything got a home run.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's such good advice. You know, that there's a wonderful expression in Japanese called Kaizen, and Kaizen is basically taking things baby step by step. Baby step. I mean, really small baby steps, meaning what's the smallest possible thing you can do today that will take you to the next, you know, that will further your career or whatever. And I, when I teach writers, I teach them story structure, and it's the same kind of thing. You need to have structure. It's a left brain, right brain combination. And that's obviously what you do too in when you coach, which is wonderful. Where do you think you first developed your entrepreneurial spirit? Where do you feel that came from?
Oh my God, so long ago. I was young, and I'm living in a little, my dad was a farmer, so there were about like 5 cars driving by where I was living. And when I was young, I wanted to make lemonade or doing little craft thing and sell that by the side of the street. So my parents convinced me not to do it, but I always had those idea. And even the, just an example, you remember those little toilet paper, like a kind of square kind of thing? I don't know, I was really young, and I'm like, why don't they invent something? Like, it's kind of a roll, and you just lock it there, and people are, no, that won't work. Of course it works, and now that's what we got. So it's come really, really young. My granddad had a farm, so my dad and his brothers took the farm over. My dad started 4 or 5 businesses in his life, almost did bankruptcy a couple of times, and he had to reorganize himself, and he had to be flexible. And he always told me, like, go to the school, have a good job. So it's why I studied in actuary. I was sure I would earn $180,000 and be in trouble the world. It didn't work out. I still study in that, but it didn't work out. So my entrepreneurship just came back, and my dad was against it because he knows how hard it is to be an entrepreneur.
But
at the same time, that's what brings the flexibility. I can travel. I do my real estate deals from my phone in my car. I can take radio interview in my car when I'm traveling. It's just so much flexibility and lifestyle that you cannot have as an employee, unfortunately, most of employees. And that's why I love also to teach in corporation, because even in the structure of being in a company, the people who have the most entrepreneurial skills or the most sales skills or the most marketing skills like we need as an entrepreneur, those are the people who will become better leaders for their team. I do a lot of team building and leadership program. And that's why more the people have knowledge around the clock and all kind of department in the business, more those people are the best asset for the company. And that's really important to develop that skill and that creativity and that entrepreneurial spirit, because in school they don't teach that. And 70% of the businesses are small and medium businesses and entrepreneurs, but they don't teach nothing in entrepreneurship or business. Barely. It's a few schools now they do, but just a few. So it's a shame that the society didn't adapt on that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Now, talk a little bit about, and I think this is related to your own struggle with depression and suicide when you were very young, with you know, contemplating that. You have a nonprofit that's called Keep Dreaming, Keep Living, and what do you hope that that communicates to people?
Yeah, this is really my mission, is to help people to reconnect with their dream, or at least kind of think about their dream and try to realize them. Because I think I said earlier, like, if you stop dreaming, you start dying. And the keep dreaming, keep living is like, okay, continue to dream and you will see life will kind of fall into place and finally things will settle and better time will be. And because I spoke to many schools and I still do some pro bono skiing and it for different organizations and all that, of course, we need the cooperation and the paid speaking gigs, but that nonprofit arm that I have in my businesses is really to be able to give back. And we, especially as a Renaissance woman, as you know, we are here to serve. We are here for service and to help people, to give back, to inspire, and to make a difference. And I think everybody in business who wants to give back, they need a nonprofit because, of course, as an ex-financial planner, there is tax advantage to do that. And people who donate to your nonprofit, they can deduct and all that. So it's why we need both, I think, in the corporate world right now.
And you're right. You know, wanting to inspire and serve others is a distinctive Ren woman trait. Now, how can our listeners find out more about you and your services and your publications?
Yeah, my website, I'm on Facebook, YouTube, and I have a million people on YouTube. You can Google my name or Nadine Racing, nadineracing.com. I'm easy to find. And for people who want maybe to go one step further, I have free video training for 1 hour on my website, womenscorporatetrainer.com. And it's really kind of a six-step process. How to create your message and your branding. I can help people to create their own website for less than $100, but at the same time, they need budget, they need system, productivity, a business plan, or at least a business summary and all that. Because of my financial planning, my creative part, and now in the speaking industry, I kind of join everything all together, and it's for free for people to download. It's at womenscorporatetrainer.com.
And you know what's wonderful about what you just said is that that's just so Ren. It's so Renaissance woman, because you took these three what appear to be very different skill sets and you joined them into this wonderful, wonderful whole, this wonderful package, which is fabulous. Well, our time is up, Nadine, but it has been wonderful talking to you. You are a true inspiration. And by the way, I love that your last name, La Joie, means joy, because it has indeed been a joy speaking with you.
Thank you. And I really want to lift people with that song because you need to be a leader. You don't need to have somebody else in front of you. You are the leader. I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. If I fail, if I succeed, at least I live as I believe. No matter what they take from me, they can't take away my dignity, because the greatest love of all inside of me. So everybody,
become a
leader, become a lover,
yes.
Love yourself, love your power, and just go get them, girls.
And that was such a great way to end the podcast. I really thank you. And it's so nice when you get to bring in that wonderful talent for singing as well. So this has been a true privilege. And I will sign off now. And thank you so much, Nadine.
Thank you.
You've been listening to to the Wren Women Salon Podcast, inspired by the book Wren Women, What Modern Renaissance Women Have to Teach Us About Living Rich, Fulfilling Lives. For more information, go to www.wrenwomen.com or www.wrenwomentalk.com. Wren Women is available for purchase on Amazon and can be ordered at a bookstore near you.